Welcome to the Regen Brands Podcast. This is a place for consumers, operators, and investors to learn about the consumer brands supporting regenerative agriculture and how they're changing the world. This is your host, Kyle, joined with my co-host, Dave C. Let's dive in. On this episode, we have Phil Graves, who is the CEO at Wild Idea Buffalo. Wild Idea is supporting regenerative agriculture through their nose-to-tail offering of regenerative organic buffalo products. In this episode, we learn about Dan O'Brien's journey starting Wild Idea, Phil and their team's big plans for future growth, and just how vital the American bison is to regeneration as our keystone ruminant species here in the United States. Phil has an amazing background, and we were fired up about the future of Wild Idea after recording this one. Let's dive in.
What's up, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of the Regen Brands Podcast. We are fired up today to have Phil from Wild Idea Buffalo, one of the Regen pioneers in our space, especially on the brand side. So excited to dive into all things Wild Idea with Phil. So welcome, Phil.
Thanks so much for having me.
Yeah, of course. We're super stoked. I'm super stoked. Outside of people who actually have their own bison ranch, I might consume more bison than the regular human. I've got a freezer stocked of Wild Idea as we speak. So yeah, I'm really excited to have this conversation and to share your story with our audience. It's going to be really fun.
Oh, me too. I'm spoiled in my career. I've been able to work for companies who offer products that I love, whether it's a Patagonia jacket or a Wild Idea Buffalo ribeye steak. It's a great place to be.
Awesome. Right on. Well, for those who aren't familiar with Wild Idea, before we dive into the origin story, just give us like a quick lay of the land. Like, what do you make or produce or raise, and where can people find your product?
Absolutely. So 25-year-old business. Our main revenue driver is buffalo meat. That's what we've sold from the start. We are nose to tail. Like, literally, you can buy the tail for a pet treat. The typical offerings that meat companies would have. So roast, ribs, stew, burgers, steaks. We've got some shelf stable products like snack sticks, jerky, you name it. If it's got buffalo meat in it, we offer it. Leather is an emerging category for us. We have a product with our partner Patagonia on the boot side, and we have some other buffalo leather products on the horizon too. So those are their two main areas, meat and leather. And we're also looking deeply into R&D for buffalo fiber in that spirit of using the whole animal.
Super cool. You know, a lot of people say nose to tail, but you literally sell the tail.
We sell the ox tail. That's what it's called on our website. You mentioned where to pick them up. Our website's a great place to go. That's www.wildideabuffalo.com. And if you're looking for our product in a store by you, we also have a store locator section. Our biggest grocery partner is Natural Grocers, and we're at many of their locations across the country.
Awesome. Love it. Anthony and I were just chatting about it. We've both seen Wild Idea in the freezer section at the Natural Grocers here in Bend, Oregon. I've definitely made a purchase there. Before we dive into the origin story, I'm curious to know, why does Wild Idea choose the term buffalo instead of bison?
I get asked this question on a weekly basis, sometimes a daily basis. I think they're interchangeable here in North America. The scientifically correct term is bison or American bison. The reason we call them buffalo is that colloquially they've been called buffalo for centuries here by Europeans when they came over. And our Native American friends refer to them as buffalo. So we source from many Native American partners. They call them buffalo. We call them buffalo too.
Mm-hmm. Love that.
We definitely are going to have to talk more about this intersection of food and fiber, because I think for Regen Ag to really find its footing and scale, we're going to need more of that. So I'd love to hear that y'all are working on that. But I know Dan is kind of a pioneer and legend in the space. For those that don't know about that, Phil, and then also for those that maybe need a recap on the buffalo or bison being this keystone species for a large swath of our ecosystems here in North America, just take us through the origin story and how Wild Idea got started and why it got started and all that.
You bet. So our founder, Dan O'Brien, has a heart for birds. That's really where it all began. He's a biologist by training. He spent many years working with the Peregrine Fund, helping to reintroduce peregrine falcons across the country. And he saw firsthand that the impact traditional or chemical slash industrial ag was having on bird populations. He's an avid bird hunter himself. And when grouse populations started going down and some of these great upland birds were being decimated by traditional farming, Dan realized that there's a major connection with the land and the wildlife that inhabits the land. So for Dan, he didn't get into this buffalo business to build a meat empire. He did it from his love of birds and wanting to protect wild places. So he started like most ranchers and cattle, saw the highs and lows of the commodity cattle industry, and he saw that cattle, and at least if you don't do it in a rotationally grazing way, and sometimes even then if you're not doing it the right way, they can be a net harm to the environment. And buffalo, Kyle, as you mentioned, are a keystone species. They've been here for tens of thousands of years in North America, and they've evolved to coexist with native prairie grasses and healthy grasslands. So with buffalo, their hooves are different than cattle. They're shaped more like a little spade. So they lightly break up the soil. That's great to get water and air in the soil. They move the seeds around for the native prairie grasses when it sticks onto their coats. And a key part about buffalo is they love to roam. So they don't hang out in one little area that's next to a creek or by their favorite food like cows do. They like to just get out there and roam around. That's what they were designed to do. So with our buffalo, we approach it on large landscapes. We have a 36,000 acre home ranch. Dan's first ranch was about 600 acres. So a good start, but nothing like what it is today. Wow. And so back in the day, he recognized that, all right, cattle aren't great for the environment. Buffalo is, definitely a different species. It's not domesticated, but it is, from his research, the right choice for planet health and biodiversity and building healthy ecosystems. So he actually visited another buffalo producer in western South Dakota. And he was watching their roundup where they do their annual counts and ear taggings. And he wasn't planning to purchase any buffalo at the time. He was just soaking it all in, trying to understand the differences of buffalo and cattle. And it's one of the greatest sales pitches of all time. The ranch that he visited, they had 13 orphaned buffalo. And the owner of that ranch said, "Hey, Dan, if you want to take these 13 orphaned buffalo, whatever survives the winter," and South Dakota winters are no joke. Right. He said, "Then you can just pay us for whichever animals survive." And that's tough. South Dakota winter with no mother to take care of them. But Dan, he took the bait. He raised those 13 orphan baby buffalo. Wow. And now our herd is about 750 head, going from that initial 600 acres at the Broken Heart Ranch to our Cheyenne River Buffalo Ranch, where we operate today.
Wow. Did all 13 make it through the winter?
They did. They did.
Wow. That's an incredible story. Okay, so that's how the ranch started. How and when did you get involved with Wild Idea?
I got connected through the Patagonia relationship. So I worked at Patagonia for 7 years, looked after the venture capital fund, and that's where my interest in regenerative and organic agriculture was turbocharged. I've always been passionate about organic foods and thinking about the food that you eat and the clothes that you buy and its impact on the environment, but going deep on supply chains at Patagonia is really where I recognize the importance and power that a supply chain can have on the environments, on the climate crisis. And that's where I learned about really buffalo deeply. I helped lead the Patagonia transition on the financial side as an investor into Wild Idea. And that's where I saw wild buffalo grazing on large landscapes for the first time. And they nabbed my heart. These keystone species freely grazing on tens of thousands of acres, building healthy habitats for all sorts of critters, black-footed ferrets, birds, you name it. They are everywhere in this thriving ecosystem. And for me, looking at hundreds, if not thousands, of companies that are doing good things on the environmental, social, and governance side, ESG, I had not come across a company where you have environmental good that moves lockstep with the financial revenue and profitability things that are tracked from a business standpoint, like Wild Idea. So wow. I've been an advisor to the family for a long time, very passionate about helping them along in their journey. And I was honored and completely flattered when they asked me to join as CEO about 6 months ago. And it was a an offer I could not turn down.
Wow.
Really cool.
So can you educate our listeners on two things? One, how different it is to manage buffalo versus cattle. Because like the bison will kill you. Like it's like a different, it's like a totally different ball game, right? So that's one. And then two, I think when a consumer goes to the store, they see bison or buffalo on the shelf and they automatically think free range, fully grass fed, grass finished. And really the vast majority of that in our country is not the case, right? And so can you describe kind of and speak to those two things and how Wild Idea is so different in those two categories?
You bet. I'll take the second question first. Spot on, Anthony. There is a common perception, which is a misperception, that if you see buffalo in the grocery store, you think of it as the Wild Idea model, where you have these beautiful, majestic animals grazing over tens of thousands of acres. And the reality is that's not the case. I think like many market-based offerings, they look at, okay, the price per pound for buffalo may be attractive, or it's a hedge against cattle prices because it's a little bit of a different meat. And so people get into the buffalo industry that way. Well, Dan is very rare in that he was raising cattle and doing rotational grazing. And then when he made the switch to buffalo, he recognized that these are truly different species and you cannot treat a buffalo just like a cow. Buffalo are not domesticated. They can kill you, as you said, Anthony. That's the bottom line. You do not pet them. You do not treat them like cattle. And so for us, we are in probably the 1% of the 10%. And what I mean by that is more than 90% of buffalo that you purchase at the store or at a restaurant with a buffalo burger was finished in a feedlot, which is designed for cattle, and it was shipped to a slaughterhouse to meet its end of life. That is, first of all, terrible from an environmental standpoint. I'm sure we've read about the travesties that happen at feedlots, even with traditional cattle who are domesticated. So it's a little bit of a better path compared to a buffalo going there. But still, they wreck the environment. They are stressful for the animals. And then again, the transportation miles and the conditions that these animals will be exposed to, being trucked sometimes hundreds of miles to a feedlot and then hundreds of miles to a slaughterhouse. It's terrible for cows, and it's indescribably horrible for buffalo. These are not domesticated animals. They're not used to being on a truck. They're not used to being right around humans. And so when they're one, treated that way, they're incredibly stressed, kicking out adrenaline and cortisol. Many buffaloes die in that process. It's something you don't see on the packaging when you buy traditional buffalo meat. And you know, frankly, they weren't designed by nature to eat grains and corn that they're fed in feedlots. It's simply used because efficiencies are there. You can fatten them up. It doesn't help the quality of the meat. One of the things that I've learned recently is we were talking to in the early days, one of the traditional slaughterhouse plants, and we said, "What do you do with the livers?" Because you know, at that time, livers weren't in high demand. They are now for their nutritional benefits. Yeah. But he said, "We never get the livers." And we said, "Well, why is that?" And the reason is because, as we know, livers process toxins for the body. So if a buffalo goes to a feedlot and is forced to eat things that is not designed by nature to eat, its liver is destroyed, and it can't even pass inspection to be sold for human consumption.
Wow.
And so if the liver is trashed, you can imagine the quality of the rest of the meat. So bottom line, buffalo have no business being in a feedlot or shipped to a slaughterhouse. And for us, I said, you know, 90% of buffalo are feedlot bound. Wild Idea never has sent an animal to a feedlot. And then where we go from that 90% to the 1% is the ones that are truly grass-fed and grass-finished. On the buffalo side, that's great. We commend our competitors for doing that, but they end up going to the slaughterhouse too. So again, you have an animal that is not domesticated being loaded up into a truck, shipped often hundreds of miles and marched into a slaughterhouse. And so for us, with our field harvest, that's where we're truly unique compared to any meat that you can get in the grocery store, because we take the animals down humanely by a marksman in the field. I've witnessed the process. They're just there chomping on their favorite native prairie grass, and then lights out. It's completely pain-free. The herd isn't stressed. They just kind of look over at Fred and be like, oh, I guess Fred's taking a nap. And there is no comparison between our humane field harvest and the conventional way that companies are taking buffalo to market.
I know Kyle's salivating to get into the field harvesting.
Yeah. So, I mean, I've been lucky enough to witness one buffalo field harvest myself, and I couldn't agree more with your assessment. It is when, and not to say that death is ever beautiful, but I couldn't think of a better way for an animal to die, to be surrounded by its family in its natural environment, doing what it does every day. And then just like you said, you know, marksman shot, drop immediately, no pain. And I don't understand how or why this happens, but the herd really is relatively unaffected. And at the ranch I saw it at, the buffalo actually crowded and kind of like acknowledged the Fred, in this case, the buffalo that was down, went over and sort of like gave it a nudge or something, and they moved on. And then I think the last buffalo to spend time there was its mother, hung out for a few minutes, just the two of them, and they moved on, and they all sort of started stampeding around, almost like in a celebration of life in some weird way. It was really emotional and moving to see, and strangely very beautiful. And I can't think of a better way to support a business that's doing that sort of operation. One of the questions I have, are there any studies that kind of show, you mentioned all the stress levels with CAFOs, like the consolidated animal feed operations and the slaughterhouses. Are there any studies that show how the adrenal glands and the other hormone issues stay in that meat versus when they're field harvested, like just by comparison?
Yeah, I mean, for sure, you can scientifically pinpoint the nutritional density of the meat, both from eating dozens of types of different prairie grasses compared to one invasive species grass that has better yields, quote unquote, than native grasses, and then flipping the animal to a feedlot where it eats the same thing every single day that nature did not design it to eat. Dr. Fred Provenza will be joining our company for a National Bison Day event on November 5th. If anybody is in Western South Dakota and wants to drop by Rapid City and hear the expert talk about the benefits of native prairie grasses impacting healthy meat and then therefore healthy humans that consume that meat, that'll be a great learning session for all involved, myself included. On the stress side too, so you've got the native prairie grasses that our animals eat, and then you have the fact that, as you've witnessed with your own eyes, Kyle, the animal is completely knocked out with zero pain, doesn't know what happened. If there are any hunters that are listening right now, you know the impact on the meat itself. If you have a bad fight or flight experience, if it wasn't a clean kill, if you've ever eaten an animal that has had that happen to it, you can tell this, the quality of the meat is far inferior. And I think there's just the subjective taste test. If you try one of our grass-fed, grass-finished buffalo burgers compared to competitors, I think you'll be able to tell absolutely yourself. And then the science is quite clear through Dr. Provenza's work and others that when you don't have those cortisol and adrenaline issues at the harvest, the meat itself is better for you.
That's incredible. And you mentioned the burgers. I think I had three of the Jill's grass-fed, grass-finished bison for buffalo burgers last night for dinner. They are truly amazing. And I love that they come pre-seasoned and, you know, just throw them on the grill, pick them up, easy peasy. Mm-hmm. Let's transition a little bit and talk about some of the brand traction. I think you mentioned that the brand is like digitally native, started most of the selling online. And the primary grocery partner today is Natural Grocers. When did the Natural Grocers relationship take place? What does it look like now? And what are some of the hurdles that you run into selling a product as unique as yours? You mentioned like the 1% of buffalo meat versus all the other meats. Like, how challenging is that? And what do you have to do to succeed?
You bet. So it even goes, you know, to the origin story where Dan, with those 13 buffalo, and several years later, fast forward, we had our first harvest of, call it, 8 buffalo. This was kind of right when e-commerce was starting back in 1997. So Dan wasn't an ace in building websites. And neither was Jill O'Brien, who was a partner and still is a partner in those days. They started by writing letters to friends and family across the country saying, hey, we don't want to send our animals to a slaughterhouse where it can go in the traditional meat supply chain. Would you be interested in purchasing from us? So that's the whole D2C play with pen and paper back in the day. And then several years later, we get a website up and running. And there are challenges and opportunities with all of those sales channels. We have a small retail store in Rapid City, but the bulk of our business is online, D2C, at wildideabuffalo.com. And then we have a growing wholesale business, too, with, as Kyle mentioned, Natural Grocers as a key partner. With our D2C customers, I think the people that truly know Wild Idea understand that because we are harvesting the whole animal, we're not buying fillets from a broker or ribeyes from a broker, we have to closely manage inventory, and sometimes we're out of stock. In some ways, that can be challenging for customers if they really want a chuck roast and we don't have it. Sorry, we can't just magically create another one. But by and large, our customers get it. And in some ways, that's great because it keeps people coming back to the website, seeing what we have in stock, seeing what we don't have in stock. With our wholesale channel, that's a different animal because if you have a wholesale relationship, you need to consistently have that product in stock. And so where we've approached it is the fact that about half of our yield from an animal is ground. That's terrific because it's very rare for us to run out of ground. I think we did once during the pandemic when so many people were buying online and seeking out grass-fed, grass-finished for health reasons. We've had a few times where we've stubbed our toe and had to tell Natural Grocers, hey, we're out of this product, but it's very rare. So for us, ground is the foundation of our wholesale business. We have some other products that we are confident we can offer on a consistent basis going forward. So you don't see the Wild Idea section at the store and it's empty. But it's always a challenge. We're vertically integrated and I love that. And sometimes it keeps me up at night trying to solve some really complex problems because we are all the way from pasture to harvest to processing plant to packaging to shipping. The point it leaves our control is when we hand it off to the UPS driver to take it to Anthony's door or Kyle's door. So lots of great benefits in terms of transparency, traceability, just full control of the process. We're never calling a broker to get more of any individual product. But with that vertical integration, you've got to work through some issues as they pop up.
And you're aggregating from other producers as well on top of that. And we trying are. To do some fiber things and this and that. So I can only imagine that it's a fun CEO role, I'm sure. The whiteboard's big and got a lot of scribbles on it.
No doubt. There's never a dull day at Wild Idea.
Yeah, love it.
I meant to ask this earlier, but I'm curious, what is your favorite cut or product that Wild Idea manufactures? Mm-hmm. And if you have to boil it down to like top three, I'm okay. That's fine.
Top three, I'd go ribeye on steaks. Love me a good ribeye. I'm a sucker for hot dogs too. We make some great hot dogs. And that's something just as a family, you know, Tuesday night, throw the dogs on the grill. Everybody gets to dress it up however they like. Those are great too. And then one of my surprising favorites as I've really dug into our whole product line has been our Italian sausage. It is so good. My wife makes a delicious Italian sausage and spinach meal. That's excellent. You can throw it over pasta. There's so many ways to bring that deliciousness to the plate. So those are my three: hot dogs, ribeye, Italian sausage. Final answer.
Love it.
Okay, nice. I've tried one. I've had the ribeye. I haven't had the other two, so I'll have to add those to my next order. I'm a big top sirloin guy. Love the top sirloin that Wild Idea does. For some reason, I just have an affinity for super lean cuts. But yeah,
you're crazy, bro. Ribeye all day. I can't do that. I can't do the lean stuff.
Hey, you know, to each their own. And that's the best part about, you know, there's plenty of different cuts on the animal. Somebody's got to eat everything, right? So it's good that we have different tastes.
That's right. I'm curious, Phil, you know, this is not a brand new business. You've been associated with them for a long time. There was obviously really good, solid financial fundamentals for you to be an investor in them and then an advisor. They've brought you on for a reason. My assumption is that is to grow in some way, shape, or form. You've kind of alluded to some of those things. I mean, what do you see the real opportunity and where do you want to grow this thing?
sky's the limit. And that's clearly articulated, Anthony, and basically exactly the fact pattern here. So we've been around for 25 years. We're not the new kid on the block. We've been doing regenerative organic agriculture before people even knew what that was. Dan has been passionate about birds from, you know, basically birth. And so for us, it's essentially getting the story out there. I think if many people knew how Wild Idea was different than a, you know, Tyson Foods or a competitor in the buffalo space, I won't throw anybody under the bus, but if you really closely examine the supply chains of our business and how they're different, I think there's a really good chance that they'll purchase a Wild Idea burger for their next burger. So the marketing, the storytelling, it's something that is part of any successful business. Where we have an incredible edge is that we don't have anything to hide. Colton, who's Dan's son-in-law, Dan and Jill's son-in-law, is our ranch manager and sourcing manager. And he often refers to Wild Idea as a glass house. We have people out all the time, come witness the process, come witness the field harvest. Heck, we show the field harvest up on the website and you can watch yourself a field harvest while you're sitting at home. I don't know that our competitors would feel comfortable showcasing how their animals become meat. And so for me, I'm fortunate to have some time at Patagonia and now to sit at Wild Idea, where I've been able to work for companies that truly care about their footprint on the environment. And again, with that regeneration potential and the climate crisis, one of the things that I learned, and it's relatively recently when I was at Patagonia, is that grasslands sequester a heck of a lot of carbon. Everybody thinks about planting trees and some kind of far-fetched climate solutions, like sucking it down from the air and storing it. That's not going to save the home planet. And I, for one, don't want to go to Mars with Elon Musk. No offense to him. I want to fix what damage has been done here. And for the stuff that's intact, keep it intact. Let's not develop it. So with Wild Idea and native prairie grasses, one of the key things that drew me to the company was identifying that if we get more producers to switch from traditional beef cattle to buffalo and do it the Wild Idea way, where you have native prairie grasses that you don't plow up, or if you are operating on land that's been plowed, bring back the native prairie grasses and building soil biology and spurring that soil back to life, the carbon sequestration potential is incredible. We did a study commissioned by Patagonia back in 2015, and one of the takeaways is that on an acre of Wild Ideas land, we are sequestering 4.5 tons more carbon per year compared to neighboring ranches. That's insane. And if, again, just think about replicating that. And as when we grow,
you said per acre, correct?
Per acre per year.
And on the home ranch, I think you said it was 36,000 acres.
Right.
Right? Yeah. So, I mean, I can't do that math in my head, but I'd imagine 4.5 tons times 36,000, that is a ton of carbon sequestered every year. I mean, that's a monumental difference that makes. And to your point, like, if we can get more people to transition from cattle to buffalo, like, that could just be a game changer.
100%. And I think food is something that really unites us. Conservation is something that unites us. The fact that, you know, Dan is not a tree hugger. He's a bird hunter, and he cares about the same things that many people across the country, including in Middle America, care about. That makes Wild Idea, in my view, a really good ambassador to folks to kind of talk about the impact of the food you eat and the environment. And the bottom line is, we all want to have clean air, clean water, abundant fish and wildlife, and the habitat that's needed to support them. For us to enjoy, for our kids to enjoy, and for our kids' kids to enjoy.
Yeah, one of the other things I love about food versus what has traditionally been, if you think back the last 10, 20 years, like an EV or solar panels, where there's significant upfront investments required to kind of, quote, go green. But with food, you can make a decision one day to decide, hey, instead of a beef burger, I'm going to try bison or buffalo. You know, and it makes the ability for people to make an impact significantly easier. And it could eventually lead to a daily change, you know, and not just a massive impact or investment that they have to make, which I think is really cool. It just makes everything accessible, which is nice.
It does. Accessibility really matters. And we're fortunate that we have some really nice high-end price points, tenderloin filet, for example. We also have some very accessible price points, Italian sausage, ground. Those are things that go a long way in a meal and make it within reach for just about everybody in our country.
When when you think about growing an enterprise like this and us, and when we talk about scaling the regenerative movement, and I spend so much of my time on the investment side, Phil, that we have this chicken and egg conversation, right? Do we need to grow consumer demand through that storytelling and these brands? Do we need to aggregate and, you know, get the production to transition like you mentioned? Like, do we need to do it all at once? Like, how do you see that as the CEO of an organization like this? Like, how do you see that picture coming together?
Well, balancing supply and demand is incredibly tricky, especially if you're vertically integrated. Again, I can't just call somebody and triple our inventory of ribeyes and tenderloins. So the key is for us relationships and the sourcing partners that we have. Anthony, you touched on that. So about 25% of our supply comes from our home ranch. 25% of our supply comes from Native American owned and operated tribal lands. We want that to be 50% in the next 3 years. And the balance comes from other private producers, non-native private producers. And the fact that we have been operating this way for 25 years, we have contracts and affidavits that will require to show that the animals are raised in a way that it's the Wild Idea way. And in some cases, it's that just plus a handshake deal on a price. And because they know us and trust us, and they know that Wild Idea is on the move, and we're gaining some good traction, even before I joined the company, that helps us shore up our supply so we can make some phone calls. Colton specifically can make some phone calls and bring more head into our process. And on the marketing side, too, to balance that incremental supply, it's been really powerful to see the hunger, no pun intended, of customers and consumers at large for the real deal, authenticity. You know, I've seen some studies that show the number one thing that people care about and underscore younger people, Gen Z, et cetera, is authenticity behind a brand too. They're fed up with greenwashing. It's been forced upon them for many years. And with the digital tools that we have about traceability, transparency, certifications, we're charging after regenerative, organic certified, which uses organic as a baseline. Those are the things that we think are going to give us that edge and be able to grow and pull through as many buffalo as we possibly can and do it in the Wild Idea way.
You touched on certifications. I know this is something, Anthony, I wanted to talk about. You serve as a board member on the ROA. I'm curious from your perspective, like, how challenging is it to get that certification at your home ranch, number one? Number two, how hard does it become to maintain that level of integrity at your potential partner ranches, and what does the implementation look like, and how do you bring those new potential ranching operations on and ensure that they're meeting those standards?
Sure. So in terms of what do we need to do to get rock and then maintain it, the on-the-ground work, nothing changes. We've been regenerative organic without being certified for 25 years. I drafted with our team at Patagonia and plenty of help from companies like Dr. Bronner's and Demeter and Rodale Institute, some heavy hitters in the organic and regenerative ag space. And so I know every single requirement for ROC. We've compared that to what Wild Idea has done. And the bottom line is we don't have to do anything differently. What we do need to do is the paperwork and get the auditors out and kind of just, you know, go through that process. I hate to say it, you know, flippantly, but, you know, we're fortunate that, and that's why I joined Wild Idea, is we've set the high bar for animal welfare and for regeneration for 25 years. So from that standpoint, it's just a little bit of cost and paperwork. So we're hopeful to have that here in the next 3 to 6 months. Regenerative organic, just to spend a brief moment there, in my view, is the most important certification to look for consumers. Organic is a solid foundation, and I won't disparage the organic certification, but it's not as broad as it was intended to be. And I will disparage hydroponics as being part of organic. I don't think there's necessarily anything categorically wrong with hydroponics if done in the right way, but it does not build soil health. And the organic certification was drafted to talk about building healthy soil. So if you're growing something in a plastic bucket, it is not organic. So hydroponic was a key part of why we drafted regenerative organic certified to begin with. The term regenerative itself is a term that we felt was starting to be co-opted by big chemical ag companies, climate smart agriculture, till a little bit less, use a little bit less water or 10% fewer chemicals each year. And we thought that incremental change is hogwash. We've got to just like call spade a spade. If it's not organic, it's not regenerative. And if it's not regenerative and organic, it's not going to create the change that we need to see. So I'm very proud of what Elizabeth Whitlow, the executive director of Virginia Organic Certified, has built in a very short period of time. I was honored to serve on the board alongside her and some pioneers in the space. And for us, it's really important because our existing customer base has known Wild Idea for, in some cases, 10, 20 years. They know what we're all about. Many of our customers have visited the ranch. But if you're popping into a natural grocer's for the first time and you've never heard of Wild Idea, those are the kind of things that I think will really give us that credibility and customer recognition. So absolutely fired up to work with Elizabeth and pursue regenerative organic certification. Audubon certified ranching, conservation ranching, bird friendly. That's something we're, of course, with Dan and all of our passion for birds, we're keenly interested in and pursuing that too. And from an animal welfare approval standpoint, we're hitting that certification because with ROC, it's yes, healthy soil using organic as the bedrock of the certification, but it also includes a pillar for animal welfare and then a pillar for social fairness too, to the farmers and farm workers. So it's the most holistic, comprehensive certification that's out there. It's also hard for many people to get. So to the second part of the question, how do we scale this thing up? Because if it's just Wild Idea and a handful of other companies, we're not going to move the meter in terms of biodiversity and climate. So for our producers, our approach is to help make it easy for them. So we're undergoing the certification. We'll know where the challenges are and how to ultimately, if they need to make any changes on any of those areas, walk them through that process. And then showcase that there's a premium, a market-based premium for organic and regenerative organic certified products. So if they're already doing the hard work, we can help them with the paperwork. And then we'll be able to, over time, kick out a higher premium that we pay for those hanging carcasses when we harvest the animals on their ranch and bring them into the Wild Idea supply chain.
Okay, I got a devil's advocate question for you. Loved everything you just said. Elizabeth is amazing. Was with her for 2 or 3 days last week. You know, we support ROC. We support some of the other regenerative certifications. I think the space is still really new. So where all that shakes out, you know, we'll see. And certainly I think ROC is the aspirational bar that kind of stands above all the others. But how do we move the needle still incrementally, right? Like I hear you on the incremental change isn't going to get us where we need to go, but I'm from Indianapolis, Indiana, that guy in Shelbyville is still going to grow corn and beans on his 400 acres every year, right? How do we get him to till less, use less chemicals and feel like he's a part of it? Maybe he can't be called regenerative. Maybe he can. I don't know. Right. But like, what do we do for those folks? Because we do want to encourage them to take those incremental steps.
Yeah, I think there's no recipe like showcasing success. If you look at row crop farmers, it's go big or go home. Many family farms have been consolidated and the ones that have scratched tooth and nail to survive to this date, I can guarantee they're not making much money, if any money. At best, they're kind of break even, keeping their head above water and the debt service they have to pay the big chemical ag companies and the tractors. Yep. I could be wrong. I just don't know many 80-acre, 100-acre family farmers that are doing really, really well financially these days. And that's been documented in the Wall Street Journal and plenty of other places too. So I think, Anthony, to your point, they're interested in looking across the fence and seeing what's going on. For us, it can't just be a big hippy dippy tree hugger session talking about regenerative agriculture, kumbaya. You have to show that it works, that your products are moving off the shelves. And again, I'd underscore that premium. There's a clearly documented premium for organic products across every category. It's still too early to see how much, if any, of a premium ROC will have above organic. But I think you lead with that market-based premium. I'm a CPA from many, many years ago. And so I know that like financial statements matter and debt and service coverage ratios are a real thing and tractors aren't free. So you've got to look at all of those different components. And while ROC is the high bar and really proud to be a very small part in helping that get off the ground, we think it's really important to set the high bar, but also make the on-ramp very achievable. And so that's one of the reasons we have three different tiers within ROC, bronze, silver, and gold. So again, there's always something to strive for. It's going to be very, very hard to be ROC gold certified, but silver is a bit easier, and then bronze is a bit easier than that. So I think that is kind of one way to have that stair-step approach. And then the other is there's some certified transitional programs that are out there too. And it's hard to be organic if you're not organic today. There's a 3-year transition period. Your yields initially drop and you can't use chemicals. So the soil is worse off because you're not propping it up with synthetic fertilizers to grow in a non-natural way. And so those 3 years are hell on producers, just to be very blunt. So grateful that some other brands have offered certified transitional products to tell the story of farmers that are seeking to transition to regenerative. And there are a lot of other certifications out there, and our plan is to get everyone. Again, we don't need them to show what we're doing right necessarily. I think it's good from just a marketing and storytelling standpoint that you can have all of these merit badges. Again, nothing's going to change at our home ranch. We've been doing this the exact same way for 25 years with the field harvest on native grasses, and they don't need anything. Some of the certification process is just a little comical. I remember Dan had a animal welfare guy that came out and was looking at the 36,000 acres, and he looks at Dan with his clipboard and he goes, "So how much time do these animals spend on concrete?" Dan's like, do you see any concrete out here?
Right.
Yeah. There's going to be some of that where we're just like, okay, let's go through the motions, get the paperwork. But again, I think those things do matter for consumers, and we want to be really intentional about technical assistance training, like showing that path for traditional producers to get on the train to regenerative organic agriculture. It could be lowercase, nothing certified, or it could be uppercase with ROC or any other merit badge that's out there. But we think that, you know, there's no doubt about it that the big industrial chemical ag system is one that's not working for people or the planet, and we need to make some changes really soon.
Couldn't agree more with that last statement. I want to bring it back to, you mentioned product moving off of shelf, you've mentioned marketing, storytelling, and I'm curious from a retail perspective specifically, I see Wild Idea as being at a categorical disadvantage when you're trying to tell a story that's complicated and nuanced in a freezer section, in the type of packaging that you're in. And again, this is not a knock on Wild Idea, it's the whole category. It's not a cereal box where you've got, you know, what, 8x10 billboard where you can write a story. So how do you communicate all that nuance to shoppers at the retail space and work on acquisition within that channel?
Yeah, we basically have a 3x5 index card label that goes on our ground product, most of our products. And so that's not very much real estate, however you do it, to get your message on there. And we've talked for, you know, almost an hour, close to it. And I haven't even covered the full story. So absolutely, selling wholesale is a challenge, because if you have a rich story, how do you convey it to customers in a way that resonates on a teeny tiny little postage stamp of a label? We're looking into things like QR codes, which are ubiquitous due to the pandemic. And I think those types of things will help. I think the bottom line is just going to be grassroots, word of mouth, people hearing about Wild Idea because Anthony told them about us or Kyle told them about us. We just brought on an ambassador who knew a solid baseline level of understanding about regenerative ag and why it was important. This guy is, his name's Eric Hinman. He's a fitness freak. He's done 5 Ironman and just insanely fit and cares about what he puts in his body for a performance standpoint. He visited the ranch last week. He was just completely enamored by the power of regeneration and the health benefits of what we have. So I think for most people, it's just, you know, learning, discovering, sharing word of mouth, you know, having ambassadors that are just people that have tried the brand for the first time and relay that Wild Idea story to friends and family. That's something we're incredibly appreciative of. And then I think ultimately over time, it's just going to be the ability for a groundswell of momentum for people to understand, yes, this is better for the environment. Yes, this is better for me. One of the key things I learned at Wild Idea is, you know, buffalo, if you know anything about it, you know, it's leaner. Be careful you don't overcook it. That's kind of the one fairly widely known attribute of the product. And that is true. It's lower in fat. It's lower in calories. It's higher in protein. And it has more vitamin B and E than beef, than turkey, than chicken, or plant-based meats. So everybody thinks about, oh, plant-based meats are so healthy. Let's go toe-to-toe. I'll put buffalo against any protein out there, and we'll see who wins. So if you care about health and wellness for you, athlete, you know, weekend 5K or whatever, like, buffalo meat is second to none. If you care about what your family is eating, you don't want chemicals in your kids' mouths from a food standpoint, nothing better. And I think just over time, the human health element, the animal welfare element, and then last but not least, and this is why we got started, the environmental impact of what we do. Right. Those things will start to be more widely known. And then I'm confident over time we'll make up a significant portion in the supermarket cart.
Totally agree. And I just want to touch on like the plant-based meat alternatives who claim to be, you know, morally and or climate superior, even though they're grown on GMO row crops sprayed with glyphosate. It's just, if you really compared them apples to apples, you know, they take studies and say beef does this, we don't, so we're automatically better, versus this is the impact we make on the environment. And that conversation never really happens. So to your point, if you care about what you're putting in your body, you know, buffalo is supreme. But also, if you care about the impact you're making on the environment, buffalo is still number one. Like you mentioned, it's the indigenous ruminant of North America. It has evolved to be a part of this ecosystem. Like Anthony said earlier, it's the keystone species. The more land we can get grazing buffalo, the better off North America is and the planet is.
100%. So, you know, if we find some new ambassadors to the listeners of this, we will be stoked. We'll be even more stoked if we find some producers out there that have thought about buffalo. Maybe some, you know, crazy person in the corner of their state has tried it and they're a little interested. Reach out. Let us know. Email is info@wildideabuffalo.com. Colton, our ranching and sourcing manager, and I would love to unpack your situation, talk about buffalo. You do need a little bit higher fencing because buffalo are athletic beasts. They can jump over a traditional cow fence. But in other ways, it's set it and forget it. Once you get the right grass set up, once you get the right pasture set up, you don't have to micromanage them and do little tiny mob grazing things that you do where it's very labor intensive with cattle. You basically get enough grass for them, let them alone. Our average pasture size is, say, you know, 1,000 acres, and every few months we open the gate and they go from one pasture to the next to get on fresh grass and rinse and repeat. But with buffalo, you don't have to help them give birth. We've never given antibiotics or any of the GMO stuff that's ubiquitous in the cattle supply chain. So in some ways, once you kind of take those initial steps, just like transitioning to organic, there's a little bit of upfront pain with making sure that you get some good grass going, make sure you've got some fencing that can hold the buffalo. But after that, I mean, you sit back and let nature do its thing, and regeneration's magic. The meat itself is magic, and it's a great investment that we'd love other producers to explore, and we'd be happy to help them on that journey.
I got a question for you there. One observation on the marketing front from a regen perspective, one thing I strongly believe is we have a distinct disadvantage with that huge story arc in the beginning, right? To get trial done. But then we have a huge advantage on the back end because the products are so far superior that I think that repeat purchase will just be so much higher than your average product. So I was just thinking through that as y'all were kind of talking about that topic. And my question on the production side, Phil, is really like, we keep saying it, this is the indigenous ruminant of this country. You know, regenerative agriculture is not new. It was created and stewarded by indigenous peoples for centuries and millennia. You talk about wanting to have 50% of the production come from native producers. I think that's awesome and super important. We've seen those populations decimated by colonization, genocide, discrimination, racism in this country. You know, how do you actually do that? How do you accomplish that? How do you get those folks more involved in back stewarding their native lands with their native, you know, species that was the heart of their physical lives, their spiritual lives for millennia?
Yeah. I'll start by saying we don't have it all figured out. We've learned a lot in our 25-year journey, but we still have plenty to learn ourselves. For example, there's been a few little postage stamp size places that we have pulled into the Cheyenne River Ranch that are contiguous that were intensively farmed row crops, and it's been hard to get the native grasses into those places at the Cheyenne River Ranch because of a compaction layer. So we're still learning every day. I'll just start by saying that, and the regeneration side with buffalo. But in terms of partnering with Native Americans, for us, it's really important. As you both said clearly, Dan O'Brien didn't invent regenerative organic agriculture. I didn't. Mm-hmm. Elizabeth didn't. I mean, it's been around for a long time. In many ways, it's going back to the way we traditionally fed ourselves with animals and plants. So with Native Americans specifically, buffalo are incredibly important to their culture, and they're incredibly important to them for spiritual reasons too. And so I think the fact that, you know, you have the sacred animal, and the Lakota creation story ties back to buffalo. I can't underscore enough how important buffalo are to Native Americans and indigenous people. So for us, how we've approached it is been very transparent with our learnings. Again, like Colton says, we're a glass house. So a good example of what we've done with the Native American partnership side is at the Wallacoda Buffalo Range in South Dakota at the Rosebud Reservation. The economic development arm of the Rosebud Reservation called Redco wanted to take a hard look at bringing back buffalo as a new income stream for their people and also for cultural and spiritual reasons. But it's easy to make a motion in a board meeting and say, let's try this. It's harder to actually get the animals back and get the fencing up. And so Dan and Colton over the last several years have been going over there, helping, providing technical assistance on how to bring back buffalo. How do you need to change your operation if you've been running cattle on it for decades, which is the case for many tribes. They've switched to cattle because that's what the mainstream meat is here in our country. But the fact that others are bringing back buffalo that are showing some signs of success is really helping them, spur them along. Again, the analogy of when we were saying, look over the fence at what your neighbor is doing. Are there crops moving quicker? Are there animals looking healthier? Like those are the kind of things where success is a way to scale and inspire. So for us, that Wallacoda Buffalo Range project is incredibly important because it's the largest native owned and operated herd in the world. And we conducted the first field harvest several months ago, which is something we're incredibly proud of, almost a six-figure check that we cut. And so we just, you know, the economic development arm of the Rosebud Nation, seeing the, you know, tens of thousands of dollars coming in because of the buffalo, which are, again, incredibly important for cultural reasons and spiritual reasons, it made us very, very confident that the investment in time and resources that we had to help them along that way was absolutely the right thing to do. And for us, again, we have ambitious growth plans. We don't want to just steady Eddie and stay where we are or grow by 2% a year. And to have that supply, we need to have native producers bring back the buffalo that we can harvest on their lands and showcase how they could build their own brands and bring the buffalo back in a way that creates economic security and food justice for them and their communities. And we need non-native producers too. So we're a very big tent in terms of who wants to switch to buffalo, how can we show you? But we are especially excited about bringing back the buffalo on native lands.
That's beautiful. And I love how concrete that example was and like the actual work being done. Cause I think people usually answer that question with some really big pie in the sky plan that still hasn't even been executed. And so like, that's real traction. That's really happening that hopefully is replicable and can be taken other places.
Our next harvest at Wallacoda is next month. So we're on our way.
Love it. You talked about the economic development arm. We've talked a little bit about kind of fundraising, financing, scaling Regen Ag. Kind of want to tie all that into a couple of questions really on. We ask everyone, how have you financed the organization or what can kind of other brands learn from that? So whatever you can share there, I think is the first question, right? From a wild idea perspective. And then since you came from Tinchhead Ventures, the venture capital arm of Patagonia in one of your previous roles, you know, I see this great cohort of early stage regen CPG brands that are not getting the funding support that they need because they're not a great fit for traditional venture capital. And they've kind of graduated from those angel investors. So how do we support those brands? So two-pronged question there.
Yeah. Follow the dollars. And that's kind of the short answer. Basically, as consumers, if we can support companies like Wild Idea and other CPG brands that are doing great things in terms of environmental impact and animal welfare and social justice throughout their supply chain, the simple answer is buy more of those products. And those are the types of things that the VCs will need to look at the total addressable market and all the metrics that they really care about. That's one answer. The other is family offices are a pretty untapped community. There's a group called Family Office Exchange. Gratitude Railroad is a investment syndicate, but a lot of just high net worth individuals and family offices are represented at that table. And those are the groups where if you can find one or two individuals that are funding this type of work, they have their own network and you can tap into it too. So for us at Tinshed, we were always mindful of, can our investment plus the entrepreneurs themselves and whatever capital is like-minded we bring into the round, get them to a place where they're self-sustaining on their own. Mm-hmm. They're not going to have to keep raising tons and tons of money and go to Sequoia or, you know, TPG or some other giant private equity or venture capital fund to get them on their way. And that's the recipe that's worked for Wild Idea. We've had really hard times and scraped the bottom of the barrel in terms of our cash balance and used credit cards to make it to the next harvest. But 25 years later, we're still here. And I think a lot of those decisions that we made along the way about only working with like-minded partners, only taking capital from like-minded partners has been essential for us to have these stories like the Wolokota historic buffalo harvest happen 3 months ago.
I got another question about future outlook. You mentioned there's some aggressive growth plans, or I guess not stagnant growth plans. What does the future look like for Wild Idea in terms of, you know, what does success look like for you? Is that new products? Is that new markets? Is that bringing on more indigenous ranching partners? You know, what does it look like?
All of the above. So we have built a financial model because 10 years at Deloitte and consulting, just I'm wired to build financial models and look at them, think about sources and uses of cash. It's just a bad habit I have everywhere I go. So as of 3 months ago, we do have a 5-year strategic plan and corresponding deal model, financial model to go along with it. That being said, I'm not wed to that. One of the things that I've learned is there's a lot of unexpected things that can happen in terms of supply chain disruptions or opportunities you don't think will be there that show up and just would blow your projections out of the water. So for us, it's important to establish what we think we could do and do it in a way where we don't make any compromises. One of the things that I'm crystal clear about is if I said, hey, we're going to have to compromise on the humane field harvest, or let's purchase these animals from a feedlot just because there's so much demand, the family would throw me out of my ear. And they should, because that's not who Wild Idea is, and that's not who I am. And so for us, growth is all tied to how quickly can we do it. And we feel the sense of urgency not to make money, but we feel the sense of urgency due to the biodiversity crisis and the climate crisis. And how do we get as big as we can, as fast as we can, without compromising one degree? That's my approach. The family's the board. That's their approach too. And for us, we're hitting the gas. We've got new products rolling out on the market soon that we're really excited about.
Can you give us a sneak peek as to what those are? It's the hardest question we've asked so far today.
I will. And Jillian, Dan and Jill's daughter and our general manager will probably slap me the next time she sees me, because if you make it public, there's a sense of urgency to get it to market because people are going to ask, hey, Phil said it. We are excited to roll out a pre-cooked buffalo breakfast link sausage here.
Love that.
Very cool. Warm it up on the skillet, eat it. It's quick. It's like heat and eat. Feed it to your kids on the way out the door. And nothing better in terms of human health and deliciousness. So we have 4 or 5 other ones, but I'll give that teaser and that'll help spur us to bring it to market. Sorry, Jillian.
Nice. Is that channel focus? Is that like a DTC launch? Are you already working with your retail partners on that launch? What does that look like?
D2C to start. Longer term, certainly we'd like to scale it up to natural grocers and other partners, but D2C due to the limited volumes out of the gate.
As somebody who would make pounds of ground bison every week for breakfast, Anthony has literally seen me bring some in a Tupperware to a coffee shop. It's like what I eat to start my day. I am psyched that I'll have another opportunity to have bison in a different format for breakfast instead of my siete seasoned ground bison, which is fantastic for anybody who wants to give that a shot.
Yeah. Well, let's cross-pollinate recipes, Kyle. That sounds good.
Okay. Sounds good. I mean, really, it's taco meat for breakfast is what it is. So it's not nearly as glorious as I make it sound, but it is a great way to start the day.
Amazing. Love it.
Love it. Phil, this has been an amazing conversation, man. Thank you so much for just the awesome thoughts, the transparency, the vulnerability. We really appreciate it. We wrap up with the same question every time, and so we'll do that now. How do regen brands get 50% market share by 2050? What needs to happen for that to happen?
I think we're on our way. Frankly, we're nowhere near there now. But I think the fact that, again, I'll circle back on that consumer insight survey I looked at that showed authenticity is the most important thing for Gen Z and people that are under 40 in general. The brands that are regenerative and authentic, They don't inflate what they're doing. They tell the stories well. If they do those things and really underscore authenticity, traceability, transparency, all the good stuff, I think it's going to happen. I think we've got some great marketers and storytellers that are passionate about working for regenerative brands, either in-house or supporting those companies outside at a firm. And then if you look at young people that are graduating college now or graduated several years ago, they deeply care about working for brands that aligns with their personal mission and values. And in the talent war of CPG, would you rather go work for General Mills and make Cheerios, or would you rather go work for Wild Idea and bring back the Buffalo? I can't answer for those people, but I'm pretty confident that we're going to punch above our weight and we'll hit that 50% by that time frame.
Love it. Let's go. I'm fired up.
Giddy up. Me too.
Right on. Well, yeah, thanks so much for the time. Incredible conversation. Really hoping our listeners will enjoy this as much as I did, but I'm pretty biased. Again, eat a lot of bison and buffalo. But, you know, is there anything else you want to close with? Any other statements for, you know, we're working consumers finding brands, wildideabuffalo.com. Anything else that our listeners should know?
Yeah, check us out on social. We've got a rock solid Instagram in terms of storytelling. Just launched TikTok recently. Dan O'Brien is not managing that, our founder. He has delegated that. He's not a social media guy. But we're on all of those social channels. Hit us up on LinkedIn, TikTok, Facebook, Insta. And I'll land it with this. Let the buffalo roam.
Beautiful. Thanks so much, Phil. Really appreciate it, man.
Thanks for having me. Really appreciate it, gents.
For show notes and more information on our guests and what we discuss on the show, check out our website, regen-brands.com. That is regen-brands.com. You can also check out our YouTube channel, Regen Brands Podcast, for all of our episodes with both video and audio. The best way to support our work is to give us a 5-star rating on your favorite podcast platform and subscribe to future episodes. Thanks so much for tuning into the Regen Brands Podcast, brought to you by the Regen Coalition and Outlaw Ventures. We hope you learned something new in this episode, and it empowers you to use your voice, your time, and your dollars to help us build a better and more regenerative food system. Love you guys.